You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in, I have to say, we do have a sunny Coco, Florida.
We do.
On FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We're also heard online, and I know I have a lot of friends who are tuning in today because people feel like our world need Dr. Bwana Bostic and the City of Refuge. Amen. And we're going to talk about her prayer services today on our show and all the great things she's doing to help people who are anxious and fearful and facing such challenges due to COVID-19. So welcome to our show, Dr. Bwana Bostic.
Thank you for having me.
You look great.
Thank you.
That's your color. Yeah. And Ellen Little is here, my co-host, who, Lord knows, behind the scenes helps me with so much to put this show together every Monday.
Happy August.
Yes. There are times when I feel like, Lord, we don't have enough guests. We don't have enough people to sponsor the shows. And then, lo and behold, there comes that check from a friend or family or business that wants us to stay on air, Ellen. And it's wonderful.
It is. And we want to thank all of the listeners that are out there who continue to listen every week and continue to download the show every week.
Yeah, I think if you have a show and you speak from your heart, it is very, very easy to do a show. Mm-hmm. Because I have no ulterior motive for anything else other than to have a community radio show and share with others on our show unscripted, informative information. And we do have a guest who's going to be calling in. Two guests actually would be calling in. Paul, we forgot to tell you. We have the Florida Policy Institute that's calling in. And two lovely ladies. I think her name is Sadaf Knight. She serves as the Chief Executive Officer for the Florida Policy Institute. She has more than 15 years of experience in public policy, research, advocacy, and nonprofit management. And I think she's trying to somehow merge a call with Holly Bullard. Mm-hmm. And she spearheads the Florida Policy Institute fundraising, policy advocacy, coalition building, outreach, and communication strategies. These ladies sound like they're doing some good stuff for the state of Florida.
Well, and just a little bit about that Florida Policy Institute. It's an independent public policy research, a nonprofit dedicated to advancing policies and budgets that improve the economy, the economic mobility, and the quality of life for all Floridians. So it's a really great, you know, the way I look at it, too, it seems so
appropriate.
Again, unbiased, right?
Yes.
So that we can really kind of dive into the education and the research and the understanding of what's going on in politics.
Well, you know what? I learned about the Florida Policy Institute when I was running for office because I had to do a lot of reading about things that are going on here in the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all over the world, the economy, healthcare, environment. And I found the Florida Policy Institute to be such great advocates for economic development, conservation, infrastructure, criminal justice reforms, jobs with dignity and benefits. They also, on their website, I know you're going to put their website up on our Facebook as well. They also talk about immigration and the state budget, education, and most important, healthcare. And Lord, you know, we all know these are things that right now with COVID-19 and the coronavirus is so rampant. People are discouraged. People want answers. And so many people are still waiting to see what happened in Washington, D.C. with the checks, the unemployment benefits, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so we have a crisis on our hands in that when America does well, we all do well. The world does well. And it doesn't matter what your political affiliation is, what your race is, what your religion is. What matters right now is if you are a human being and you actually care about all of us on this earthly journey called life.
Right.
Because we are trying to balance the virus with the economy.
Not to mention a hurricane that we just went through.
With the virus with the and the economy. And we're trying to make sure that we also have a public health policy that people understand that, hey, if you get sick and you end up in the hospital, you need essential workers to take care of you as well. So why not do what's right and protect yourself and others? Because our hospitals and our nurses and our support staff, people are also being tested and they're tested positive. So what happens when they're positive? You have less staffing.
That's right.
It's not only about throwing money at the hospitals. It's about the human capital, too. Mm-hmm. So on that note, I'm going to welcome our guests who are calling in from the Florida Policy Institute. I think we have Sadaf Knight and Holly Bullard. I hope I'm saying their names correct. Are you guys on the phone?
Yes, we're here. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe we actually made this happen. The last time, I think something happened and we could not have you guys on. So thank you for taking the time from your busy day. So can you tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about both of you? I read off a little bit of your bio, but it's always nice to touch base with our guests and have them tell us a little bit about themselves and why they got involved with the advocacy group or nonprofit that they're with. So we'll start off with Sadaf Knight. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get involved? You've been with them, what, 15 years, it said?
No, I've actually been with Florida Policy Institute for just over 2 years.
Okay.
But I've been... So I'm a native Californian, but I've been living in Florida for about 3 years, and I have a background in public policy work, particularly focusing on economic development and community development. And I moved to Florida a few years ago and found the Florida Policy Institute and was really eager to get involved in public policy and advocacy here in my adopted home state. And I'm very fortunate to have the team that we do at FPI and, have been able to really advocate for all Floridians through the work that we do here and use my background in economic development and public policy research and advocacy to move the work forward.
Yeah, I love what you guys are doing. You pretty much, you touch on every single issue that affects human life on Earth. And we just read off a few of them. So thank you so much. And then Holly... you are the FPI's fundraising policy advocacy person, and you also do coalition building. How did you get involved with FPI?
Sure. So I grew up over in Tampa Bay area, and I've always been a real supporter of public school. My parents are retired public school teachers. My sister's a teacher over there in Polk County right now. And so just really wanting to connect the dots for everybody between the budget and policy and support not only public schools, but our other public services and things that are really important to Floridians, and seeing how really over the last couple of decades it pivoted to kind of disinvestment. And that was really concerning to me. And FPI was born only in 2015, even though now we feel like we've been around a lot longer, but over the last few years, FPI's been in the space now around budget and just started to step into a little bit more of the advocacy role to highlight, policy opportunities and then really try to build some coalitions around those. And we actually had our first proactive policy win this past session around a bill for finding Medicaid extra dollars for schools, for health services in schools, and what could be more pertinent right now, So this is definitely an organization that I feel really lucky to be part of.
Yeah, and what's great about what you guys are doing, not everyone has the time to sit down and watch the Florida channel that carries the state legislators in Tallahassee. So you guys bring us the highlights on what's important and what we should know affects all of us. So thank you. So right now we're dealing, let's start off our show. We're dealing right now with the impact of the economy that COVID-19 is having. And so many of us are listening to leadership in Washington, D.C., or even here in Florida, talking about testing, tracing and testing and treatment, self-quarantine, COVID-19, what to do and what not to do. What are you all seeing on your end happening with this? And what is your unified message for Floridians about COVID-19?
Sure. So, you know, Florida already coming into this pandemic was in a very precarious situation in terms of our ability to meet the needs of all Floridians. We fare very poorly across many measures when it comes to our public health system, when it comes to our state budget, our ability to raise revenues, our investments in different areas such as education, environment, infrastructure, you know, all the different things that make our communities healthy and strong. So when we were hit with the pandemic and, of course, the economic impacts of the pandemic, what we're seeing is that we're very unprepared to deal with such a disastrous event, and that we are, what FPI is seeing for on the horizon is that we're going to be facing challenges, not just this year, but next year and going forward. Our unemployment system was ill-prepared to provide assistance as it was, and is even more so right now, as we've seen. Our benefits that we provide through our state are extremely low. We also have a very high number of individuals who are uninsured, and we also have not expanded Medicaid, so we're not providing that benefit to as many people who would need it, especially right now. And then in terms of our economy, we depend so heavily on things like the sales tax and tourism. And when what we've seen is with the economy coming to such a slow period, that we our state revenues have taken a significant hit. And so as we look forward, and as unemployment continues, as we continue to see layoffs, as we continue to see people being impacted by the coronavirus, and travel being limited, we're going to see that our state budget is going to take a significant hit. Moody's, you know, anticipates that we're going to see a $8 billion budget shortfall. And so looking forward, we're really concerned about our state's ability to meet the needs of Floridians, not just now, not just during the pandemic, but also into the future as we build back and hopefully come out of this.
Yeah, a disaster. I mean, we all saw what happened with the website. So was that Holly who just responded to that question? Or was that...
No, that was Sada.
Oh, okay. I wish you guys were here. I mean, the studio is really fun. And it's unscripted, so it's kind of like having coffee with friends without coffee, really.
Yeah,
it's like being in a living room.
Right.
So Holly, you are with the fundraising part of FPI. Tell us, before we dig in, tell us a little bit about the nonprofit, and what is your main focus at FPI?
As you said, we are a nonprofit. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're also a part of a network called the State Priorities Partnership. That's a network that's run out of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities out of Washington, D.C., so we're a partner of that, but we're independently run. Based out of Orlando, but we're a statewide organization, and focus on research, and now a little bit more on partnership and coalition building, et cetera, finding some advocacy connections as well. But our base is really around policy research, and the fundamentals around that are around the state budget, and to connect the dots for everyone around their favorite thing or the thing that they're most passionate about. Maybe if that's affordable housing or justice, or if it's education, healthcare, or, you know, all of the things that come together into the budget, and revenue is part of that. So that's kind of our reason d'etre, is to help to really navigate that the policy landscape for everyday Floridians, try to connect them to usable information and to get that up there for everyone to access, so that it's the transparent. What's happening with the state?
Yeah, so we like that you guys partner up with so many people in the community as well. And I read your website, and whoever built your website, kudos to them. It's so easy to navigate. And I'm glad you touched on affordable housing, because, you know, this morning I was listening to something, and someone was saying, well, it's good enough for a teacher to teach your child. If a policeman is good enough to keep you safe, a nursing assistant is safe enough to take care of your mom and dad in a hospital, why is it not safe enough for them to live in the same neighborhood with you? And it goes back to the point of, you know, wages and affordable housing and zoning and things like that. And I see that a lot of people here in Florida are focused on affordable housing. Tell us a little bit how COVID-19 is affecting affordable housing for people right now.
Well, I'll speak a little bit and then I'll throw it back to Sada too, because I know that she's done a lot of research around that as well. Really, it has to do with the income issue with folks and the fact that we have, you know, record high on unemployment that perhaps has gone down, but it's still a record high. And so when you see that and having a system that was really created in the vein of being a barrier to uptake of a service, and that's the unemployment insurance system here in the state. Even before this whole crisis happened, only about like 10 or 12% of unemployed folks actually were able to get unemployment. And that was because of the extra barriers put up and a system and a website that already was really built to create those barriers. Additionally, we have one of the shortest and one of the lowest re-employment assistance programs in the nation. So you see on all fronts with the income for anyone who's lost a job, it's very difficult to replace that income. And so, of course, it's going to have an impact on housing in terms of turnover for the different housing for that issue. But I haven't seen too much in terms of the actual housing costs going down, because you see the same kind of stock, housing stock across the state being the same. So unfortunately for folks, it's not as if it's becoming cheaper that we've seen in Florida, at least,
yes,
around rent. So there's still an unaffordability crisis, and then also just in terms of the income for folks in terms of foreclosure and eviction crisis that is really nipping at the heels, and we're pushing it off. But it's needing to come up with a longer-term strategy for that is something that we have heard necessarily from the governor's administration.
Yeah. And Sadaf, I'm going to ask you, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. Can you explain how the rise of the coronavirus impacted this year's budget? Because I know you guys publish and analyze a state budget, and you also give commentary to the lawmakers. So how did this year's budget, how was it impacted?
Sure. So the legislature was debating the budget right as the coronavirus pandemic was rising and becoming more and more of we were recognizing it more and more as a public health emergency. So right before early March is when the Florida House and Senate passed their respective budgets. And in that budget, they actually included some very positive investments, things like teacher raises that hadn't happened in more than a decade, environmental funding for affordable housing. However, after they passed the budget, you know, the bottom essentially fell out of our economy as we saw stay-at-home orders, we saw people, you know, not traveling to Florida, we saw our amusement parks and other attractions shut down. So the economy basically came to a halt. And so when the governor was reviewing the budget to look at vetoes, he preserved some of these priorities, like the teacher raises and all that, but he did veto several smaller projects and the affordable housing, a part of the affordable housing funding. The challenge really is that, you know, we don't know yet what the official revenue forecast is for this year, for this fiscal year. We'll find that out in a couple of weeks as that gets released. And once that comes out, we'll really have a better sense and understanding of what exactly we're dealing with in terms of the shortfall. And so, you know, looking forward, basically, you know, everything that's been passed in the budget could be on the table in terms of whether it will continue to be funded. What happened in previous recessions is that the legislature, you know, increased some revenue sources but made significant cuts across the board in terms of funding for programs. And this time around, we really think that instead of just looking straight to make cuts, the legislature should look at opportunities to raise revenues that would not only support preserving all these great investments that the legislature provided in the last budget, but also would help us to continue these investments and continue supporting public services moving forward as well. So so we'll find out in a couple of weeks in terms of, you know, the degree to which the state is facing a deficit in this year.
Yeah, it's almost like we need a coherent economic policy for all the states.
That's right.
You know, but of course, to shift a little bit, we're all looking at friends and family and listening to their stories and listening to their, I mean, people are really, really concerned about what to do with our children, but education. We're hearing about masks on the school bus, how many kids will be on the school bus. Parents are talking about getting a pod, maybe zooming in at the teacher. Then you have the inequalities, the disparities, who can afford a tutor. I mean, mm-hmm. all these things are going on right now. What are you guys hearing on the ground as far as education and what's going to happen with our children, our teachers, our parents? I mean, the healthcare policy, economic policy, education, it's all tied into one big bag. So what are you all hearing about this? What's going to happen with our state and who's going to take the lead to say what to do and what not to do? I think so. Well, any one of you guys could answer that question, because I know we're parents. We've had so many people that called and asked us to do a show about, you know, different forms of learning, whether it's online, whether it's in a pod, whether it's in person, the hybrid model. We've had a lot of our friends mm-hmm. who are teachers who are concerned about their own health and whether the children will bring the virus to them and then they take it home, you know?
Definitely. And we hear that a lot as well from our followers on social media and other partners. Another thing that I've been hearing a lot outside of just the initial issues around what kind of decisions, that there's no really good choices here if things move forward in August. And each district does have their own plan and the prerogative of the school district in Florida to decide about what that looks like. But the key that I want to address and draw attention to is really the lack of resources for school districts around this. That the CARES Act in March brought some dollars to school districts in Florida, but it really wasn't enough. So you saw superintendents of Orange County, Miami, Palm, Duval, Pinellas all join a letter along with other superintendents from large school districts saying, look, you know, without extra money, not only will we not be able to open safely, you know, the future of our school districts is really in jeopardy because of the drop of revenue that we're seeing from the economic crash. That's tied, right? So if you have plans that aren't funded, if you need more teachers or if you need more buses because you need to do social distancing, if you need to stagger of some sort, a lot of this has to do with extra resources that the state and the administration hasn't necessarily identified for the schools. And to really outline what that would cost is an order of magnitude. When you think about the extra buses running, different things of that testing in schools or other needs, there's a lot of need for extra funding for the state school districts themselves. So but that's another highlight as well. Outside of just opening or not, the impact on the school budget, meaning, you know, are teachers going to get those raises? Are we going to see another drop in for people spending? Things that aren't really sustainable long-term for the education system, much less, you know, in the short term in terms of making decisions for your family and how to treat this virus. Unfortunately, I've heard a lot of it's difficult decisions and kind of bad choices for families and not really feeling safely sending their school, their kids
right.
back to school.
And I think a lot of people who talk about this issue, whether pro or con, opening, you know, whether we should lock down again, whether we should, you know, wear masks, whether people should enforce the mask, whether it should be mandatory for children and students. The key here is we want everything open, but we want it open safely. I think that's what the point mm-hmm. that everybody is missing. It's not about, you know, what political party you belong to or who you support or who is in a leadership role and not doing the right job. It's about safety for American people and our children and our teachers, you know? So, I mean, I see it all the time. As a nurse, we have to wear our PPE to take care of our patients. And and it's heartbreaking to watch patients taking their last breath and not being able to hold the hands of a loved one, or people not having a funeral for someone that they loved all their lives. I mean, the coronavirus doesn't really care who you are. So I sometimes get frustrated because people are not showing that they care. And I think the only way to show we care is to start listening, you know, and do what's right. But let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the second round of the coronavirus unemployment checks, the federal level and the state. What do you say to people that are saying that the relief package is just encouraging others to stay home and be lazy? Because I don't believe that. I believe that right now we need to come together as Americans, and wherever we get the money from, even if we have to cut in foreign aid to give to American citizens, we should do it. So each of you, I think we'll start off first with Sonia, and then we'll go to Holly. So Sonia, my mind is on Sonia.
Okay.
I just wanted to give her a shout out. She's awesome, and I hope to meet her in person one day and bring on our show as well. So Sadaf, let's start with you. What do you say to the people who are saying that people are getting too much money and they're just lazy and they're staying home, while others like you and I and other advocates are saying, no, people need to live. They need to have bills. They have mortgages, insurances. So go ahead.
That's right. You know, I think one huge thing that the coronavirus has really shed light on and highlighted is the inequality and inequities that are foundational to our economy. So, you know, workers who are already struggling, especially here in Florida, we have one of the worst affordable housing crises in the state. We have a proliferation of low-wage jobs where families are working multiple jobs just to stay afloat, having to live further and further away from their jobs just to find a decent, affordable place to live. You know, I think what this virus has really shown is that these inequalities are unsustainable. They are embedded into our economy, and they're even worse now that we're in the face of a public health and economic emergency. So the $600, you know, unemployment benefit really is not providing something where people could, you know, even, you know, it's helping people stay afloat. It's not helping people, you know, make money off of it. And even then, at this time, what we need is for our families and communities to be able to stay in their homes, to provide food on the table, to provide for their children, create that stability in their lives and in their communities so that we can get through this pandemic. It's not about people being lazy. It's not about people not seeking work. It's about people being able to stay whole and be able to make it through this emergency and take care of themselves and their family's health as we come out of this recession, hopefully, and build up toward a better future.
Right. And for the ones who are saying that people are saving the money, and so what? So what if your next door neighbor or your American cousin or your friend from school or somebody, you know, so what if they were able to save a few bucks off of it? I don't see that as an issue, because in the long term, they're going to be spending it back into the same economy. I mean, we're all in this together. I mean, it's like I have a friend who said, you know, they should open up everything and send everybody back to work and to school. And I said, but yeah, but then what happens when people get ill? Who's going to take care of them? When you call in sick, the economic impact on people calling in sick in the workplace, and I see Ellen shaking her head about that, it's huge.
It is huge. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, going back to what both the ladies said, these are not easy
decisions.
Answers. These are not easy decisions. And unfortunately, like we've said the last few weeks on the show, it's kind of like everybody's right. You know, whatever you feel to keep your family safe and whatever you feel is necessary for your own protection, that's what you should do. I mean, definitely. And don't let the, you know, some rule make it one way or another. However, I mean, there are a lot of people suffering, and if we can get it safer so that way people can go back to work and start feeling better. It's not about the money. It's about how they're feeling.
It's about safety.
It's about safety, yeah, but I mean, it's about people's security. It's about people's mental health. You know, people that never experienced this.
And that's what our second part of the show would be about, mental health.
Absolutely.
So Holly, before we end, we have a couple minutes. We'll let you give us the website for FBI. And the same question to you. I mean, Do we? I mean, I am hoping that when talks resume in Washington, D.C. today for the second round of stimulus, that they pass it so that we could keep American citizens afloat. I love what Sadaf said about keeping them afloat, giving people the tools to continue to live. We don't want people to survive. We want them to live to pay their lights, water, telephone, car payments, mortgages, insurances. I mean, come on, we're all in this together. So what do you think about the people who are saying, well, it's time to just open everything and just stop those checks coming? That's a question for Holly.
Sure. So the Senate is going to be talking about that today. August 8th is when they're supposed to be going on recess. So that gives folks just a few days to call your senator and to express, you know, interest in some of these issues and tell your own story. I have a feeling that given the fact that the number of jobs lost that would be connected to ending prematurely the $600 unemployment insurance, just those numbers alone and the GDP drop, you know, you see interesting groups come out and say, hey, you need to keep this money. So not only SPI recommends that with a $600 extension, but also you see TaxWatch, who's another organization in the state who looked at the budget, and they said, yeah, you know, it's really important, the $600, and that was in the Tampa Bay Times. So, you know, this is not like one fight. There's a lot of groups from different corners saying that we need to support people in this unprecedented crisis, and that it's not the time to talk, to kind of quibble about, especially these ideologically driven ideas about who deserves money and who doesn't.
Right, people forget that the relief that we're giving it to American citizens. They are our brothers and sisters. We are supposed to be each other's brothers and sisters' keeper. So why not give people the assistance when they need it? Because when the economy reopens and everybody is healthy and they're able to go back to work, we would see a booming economy. That's how I look at it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And that's our website, floridapolicy.org. Please join our newsletter. We send one great newsletter a month, and so we just put that out there for folks if you want to follow us on floridapolicy.org. We also have a Twitter and a Facebook, and love to engage with folks.
Well, thank you so much, ladies, for being on the show with us today on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I think we all learned something a little more about...
I love their website. You learned so much about what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys for calling in, and please say hello to Sonia for me, because without her, we couldn't have you guys on, and I'd love to have you back on when the economy does reopen safely and we can get our lives back to normal. I want to dress up again and go somewhere in a crowd.
I know, right?
I really do.
Whatever the new normal is. I know, but we got to get dressed up. Whatever the new normal is.
I just want to go somewhere and say, hey, I'm here, and we're back to normal. You know?
Right. Well, again, thank you so much for being on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. But Sita, we're going to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors, and then we'll be right back with Dr. Buana Bostic right after this message.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9. That's cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. Our dials are 94.7 FM, FM 99.9, FM 100.7. And we're also heard on the web at WWBC AM 1510. We just had a really informative, robust session, segment, with Sadaf Wright, who is the Chief Executive Officer at the Florida Policy Institute, and she has more than 15 years of experience in public policy. Oh, that's where that 15 years came from.
That's right.
And then Holly Bullard also called in with her, and she is the Chief Strategy and Development Officer for FBI. And we had a really good conversation with them. I think a lot of people are seeing a lot of things happening with COVID-19, how it's affecting education and affordable housing and jobs and medical, you know, healthcare. Mm-hmm. We did not have the Medicaid expansion in our state, and we're seeing it happen, affecting so many people that have lost jobs. And who can carry COBRA? The COBRA is so expensive when you lose a job.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, that's when we need people like Florida Policy Institute to step in and be advocates when we can, because so many of us are out working 40, 50 hours a week. We don't have time to read what's going on in Tallahassee, but they're doing the job to bring us the highlights,
right?
And fight for us, which is great.
And it's nonpartisan too, which is what I like. I mean, it really does.
Life should be nonpartisan.
Life should be. Yes. It's the same thing with League of Women Voters.
Jeez.
You know, I feel the same way about them. You just get really good information and insight.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so our second segment is going to be with our friend, Dr. Bwana Bostic. I love her name. She is the founder of and the senior pastor of the City of Refuge Christian Center, located right here in Cocoa, Florida. And you were born in Palmetto, Florida.
Yes.
Yeah. So instead of me reading off everything, I just like to have it in front of me just in case. But so tell us a little bit more about what's happening at the City of Refuge. The last time you were here, Matt Price was on the show. Mm-hmm. And Matt was so excited to meet you and learn about his son. And he hadn't heard about it either. So tell us a little bit about what you do and why you opened the center, the ministry.
Well, we've been in operation over 7 years now. And we at the City of Refuge Christian Center right here in Cocoa, Florida, we provide adults and children with help, hope, and a reason for living. And that's our purpose, is to help them in those areas, spread the word of God, use, you know, your faith and, you know, trusting in God to get you over that hump or whatever that life issue is, and reaching out to the community. We believe in, you know, going outside the walls of the church. We're on the corner of Peachtree and Fisk, and just, you know, helping those that are in need. So as a pastor, you know, with the COVID, a lot of them now have seen how important it is to reach outside the walls, because so many wasn't able to go inside the walls. So you have to get your evangelistic team together in order to do those services for the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thanking God, because we were already doing those type of things, so it wasn't something we had to scramble to do. We just continued with the path that with we were
outreach.
On.
You were doing a lot of outreach.
Yes.
And you know, to say prayer, I believe that in science and faith. And I do believe prayers move mountains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on Friday, we were expecting this big, bad hurricane.
Yes.
And I was on the schedule to work. And my children were concerned if I would be able to drive. I mean, people were anticipating rains and thunderstorms and flooding and everything else. And I said, look, I am going to go to work Saturday and Sunday and do my thing. And they said, well, how can you be so sure? I said, I prayed about it.
Mm-hmm.
You
right.
know, and I did. So, I mean, it doesn't matter who you pray to. Your prayer will be answered if it's sincere. Right? So is, you know, I was thinking about this. Is there a limit to the capacity of a human being of what we can do for each other? Is there a limit or can we just continue, like Ellen was just saying, the word nonpartisan in politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can we just be nonpartisan human beings for just about everything?
Yes.
Can we?
I agree, because, you know, you have to care about your neighbor. You know, you have to love each other, come together, work together. And that's what the Word of God is all about. It's about unity, not division. And when we come together and see each other as human beings, you know, we can reach out and help someone else and not center ourselves around us. What's going on with me? Think about your neighbor, what's going on with them, your coworker.
You're so calm when you say that. And sometimes when you watch people on TV who are preaching, you wonder if they're really preaching to just a certain base or are they talking to everyone?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get that out to people that, in, especially in times of COVID-19, where we are watching people that we love die from comorbidities as well as this respiratory disease
mm-hmm.
that's attacking people's body and lungs and hearts and everything else? How do we get to them to say, hey, listen, we're in this together? And love is the force that moves the universe.
Right. Well, the key is prayer. We talked about that earlier. But I'm going to use an example. When we trusting in the Lord, and just use an example of going into the grocery store. Those of us that believe in wearing our masks to protect the other. And not only that, trusting God that, you know, I'm going to be covered. Because faith, you know, you have to use your faith at this time. I'm believing that my family is going to be covered by the blood of the Lamb and we're not going to get sick. That's faith. What do you believe, right? But when that person that's believing in God, having that faith, walking into a grocery store, and there's a calm and there's a peace on that person, and you can spot that calm and that peace. You can see the ones that are in a, you know, panic and nervous and fearful. You can actually see the difference on people.
Yes.
So when you, as that person with that calm, because you're trusting God, you can help that other person that's in fear. They can see that calm on you, and it can make a difference in their lives. They
right.
can see, wow, if she or he is calm, I may need to calm down as well. So it'll overflow.
It's the energy. If you have positive energy, if you give out positive energy, then you will receive the positive energy.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it this way: what do you have to lose?
Yes.
If you wear it, or if you wear it, you're helping other
you're
people
helping
and yourself,
others.
Right?
Yes.
So, in addition to having the ministry, the City of Refuge, you also do life coaching.
Yes.
So, are you? What are some of the things you do when you're coaching people? You're just like a mentor. It's like it's a beautiful way of holding people by the hand and saying, "I can help you to live your life on this planet and enjoy your earthly journey called life by
right.
doing this and this and this."
Right.
How did you fall into that? And what are some of the things you teach people?
Well, as a ordained pastor, I of course do. Spiritual counseling. But some years ago, I just felt led to get into the life coaching just to see the difference between the spiritual counseling and life coaching. And it truly is a difference. With the life coaching, and I'm going to use the word kick in the butt, mm-hmm. it's more of that, you know.
Get up. Do
get
something.
Get up.
Yeah.
You have the power to do it. Now, what is your plan to do it? So the life coach is really there to help them to tap into what they already have.
Right. So you're just motivating them.
Yes.
They've got it, but they just need that extra oomph.
Yes.
Somebody to say, hey, you know. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I like what Ellen always says about being a life coach and helping people. So all of us have a talent,
yes.
a gift, and yes. an ability to do something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of somebody tapping into that energy and saying, hey, I found it.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. And so right now with COVID-19, what are some of the issues that you're hearing from people? Are you seeing people that are anxious? Are people worried about the future? Are they concerned about losing a job? I know moms and dads out there are worried about the disparities with the school system, mm-hmm. and how are they going to catch up? People
yes.
are worried about their children
Very
falling behind.
Worried. Yes, yes. And those, the ones that you just mentioned are just on top. Those are very important issues that they're thinking about and worried about. How are we going to do this, you know? And that's where prayer comes in. You know, we have a prayer line Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. 6 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
So give out the phone number in case somebody wants to call in on
okay.
your line.
And we have two evenings, and that's Tuesday and Thursday. And that prayer line number is 712-775-7031. 712-775-7031. And the code for that is 328-522. And during this time of prayer, I have an awesome prayer team. We intercede and we war. We call it spiritual warfare for the people of God, for the nation, for our president, for our commissioners, for our mayors, our governors, teachers, students, families, you know, every part of life. We are praying for a change. We're praying for a healing for our nation. We're praying for unity. You know, it's so much to pray for now. You know,
yeah, it is. And, you know, so many people right now are feeling like the inequality is escalating.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like the American dream is drifting away from them because of what's happening with this COVID-19. And we had people who were feeling like that before.
Yes.
So can you imagine right now having to worry about whether they're going to have the unemployment benefit in Washington, D.C., with the second round of stimulus? People are really praying for that to come through as well.
Yes, yes.
You know?
And as we've been talking today, and there is a need. You see lines and lines of cars lined up to receive food, you know, from the food banks, from the churches. And all they have to do is just stay in the car, open your trunk. And many, many people are in those lines that thought that they would never be.
And there's no shame in it.
There is.
If you need
not.
It and you need to feed your family,
right.
join the car line. Right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, of course, we're watching in certain communities, in the minority communities, we're watching the health disparities as well. We're watching where so many people are being hit harder than other areas, other mm-hmm. communities mm-hmm. with COVID-19. Do you think it's a good time now to also educate people about health, preventative health?
Yes.
I know we can't go to, not everybody have membership to a gym, but people can walk.
Yes.
They can walk. We have beautiful parks all over in Brevard. And I'd like to see people take more advantage right now of gardening, walking, family time. Are you seeing like people who are saying, listen, I can't stay cooped up inside, but I'd like to go for a walk.
Right. And it's needed because, you know, those that cannot be inside, you know, have a problem just with the four walls. They need to get out. You know, you need that for sanity
yes.
sake.
Because it's
know,
a mental health issue as well.
It really is. And you need to find those things that will help you to combat the crowdedness. So going outside is great. You got the fresh air. You don't have to wear the mask if you're not close by anyone. Only when you're close by others, you can, you know, wear your mask. But it's so much to do. You can walk your neighborhood when it cools off or early in the morning. You can clear your mind. You can talk and pray. You can, you know, talk to yourself about things. What I'm going to do if this happened? And, you know, you'll find a lot of answers when you spend time with yourself.
It's called meditation.
Yes, it does.
So we're talking with for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today. Ellen Little is here with me, as usual. Thank you, Miss Ellen. And we have Dr. Bawana Bostic. She is the owner of Reveal Life Coach and Counseling Services, and she's also an ordained minister and she runs the City of Refuge. Now, what are some of the creative ways that you're coming up with to reach the people in your area? I know you have online, you're doing Facebook Live.
Yes.
And online. Mm-hmm. And what else are you doing to reach the people in your ministry?
Okay, well, for sure, the Facebook Live is on Sundays. And we're, going into other social media outlets as well, Instagram and those other outlets. And for sure, the key is, and I have to continue to say how important prayer is, because we get other people that are coming on the line, they're asking for prayer. They are in tears, they're crying. It's just a way to get out of that doom and gloom that you may be in.
I saw one church, I think it was in Ohio, they were hosting a Zoom party and asking the people in their ministry to RSVP. Mm-hmm. And then they were holding an event where they can have fellowship while they're eating dinner. So each family would get, Zoom in, and they talk about what they're eating for dinner. And then they share the recipes with the rest of the people. And they're doing that a few times a month to keep in touch with the people in their church.
Right.
People are becoming very creative. Then I heard where one church is, they're sending out personalized cards to everyone in the congregation and just says, how are you? And I think those are creative ways to keep in touch with people.
Yes.
Right? Because that's what, because with social distancing.
I have friends that are doing happy hour.
Yeah.
Online.
Yeah.
They're doing it with Zoom and just like, yeah, it's the same conversation. It's not about the drinking. It's about happy hour. We call it good. There's a few of them that are doing gratitude hour just talking about what we're thankful for, because Lord knows you can hear all the stuff on the news and people's, demise, if you will.
But yeah.
Right.
Talk about gratitude.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is, when you pray with someone online, which you're doing the online prayer, God sees your heart and he senses when someone needs that prayer.
Yes.
How are the people in your ministry coping with the online prayer?
Very well. Actually, I had a, just share briefly, and this is her testimony. Her mom went to Michigan, a member, and the people that she traveled with, the husband had COVID, and neither of them knew that. So once they got to Michigan, of course, he was hospitalized, and the mom and friend, they, had a process of going through what you go through, and, when you've been exposed. So prayer line for her was essential. She was calling in. She was, if she couldn't be on there, she would text and just say a prayer about this and that. It was her lifeline. And I have a good report that all of them are home. The husband that went to the hospital, he came out, was able to drive back to South Florida, and everyone is doing well.
Yeah.
But it looked like it was, death.
Doom and gloom back then. I also heard about people doing drive-through churches where you could drive through and get your communion or speak with the person in your church that you trust.
Right.
Because, human touch is so important right now.
It really is.
And you are not holding services right now.
Not in a building.
Yeah, everything. You're just doing, you're following.
On Facebook Live. Yeah. And I had communion Sunday on Facebook Live.
Yeah.
So I can engage with my audience. We can do communion together. So it's just been a very good experience.
Yeah. Well, a lot of places are choosing to open, but they're careful.
Mm-hmm.
Some are wearing masks and that. But I think people are missing the point that what they're saying is, if you're outside, you don't have to wear your mask. If you're indoors, it's the collective breath that they're scared of.
Mm-hmm.
That if someone in the congregation is older or sicker or have a lot of comorbidities, they can get the virus that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, as a nurse, I know I have to be careful. I don't want to bring it to other people.
Right.
So I'm following social distancing. I'm wearing my mask, washing my hands. Simple thing is washing our hands. People don't wash their hands enough.
Yes.
You know, so give us the website for the City of Refuge, because you are always looking for people who would like to donate and maybe people who want to volunteer and drop food items off and things like that for you.
Yes, and that website is cityofrefugebbm, and it stands for BawanaBostickMinistries.com. cityofrefugebbm.com. That is the website.
So do you have any challenges facing you or your ministry with the older people who probably don't have a computer or don't inability to get on Zoom or a WhatsApp or some other social media site? In that case, it's just the old-fashioned telephone?
Yes. In that case, that's what it is. That's your outreach there, you know, when you have older ones in your community or your church body that cannot, you know, tap into the social media outlets, then you have someone that can, you know, help them with that.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, some of the services that our life coach, Dr. Bawana Bostick, offers on her, with her services, identifying your goals and defining a vision of for success, creating a professional and personal growth plans for you. She actually tapers it to you and what you can do. Identifying limiting beliefs, working towards financial independence. And that's a great one. We ought to do a show about that one day, about teaching people financial independence.
Yes.
You also obtain a work-life balance, which Lord knows we need that, right?
Yes.
Learning to communicate more concisely and effectively. Develop more powerful connections professionally and personally, getting promotions, active weight loss and fitness goals, starting a new business or growing an existing one, managing an important life or business transition, and articulating core values. We have a minute left, and with that minute, can you please give a shout out for the young people who does not get involved in religion or advocacy until they get old? What can you do to draw more young people in 1 minute?
Well, just a reminder to our young audience that Mary, the mother of Jesus, she was a teenager. And the Lord used her early on in her life. And so many teenagers think that they're too young to give the Lord their lives. But that's not the truth. You can give God your life now. And why? Because all of us was given gifts and talents before we entered this world. So you have a gift, you have a talent that the world needs. And it may not be something you want. The thing about it, we don't have a choice. God gave us what we wanted. He wanted us to have. And a lot of times, you know, we want what someone else have. So
get involved.
Get involved. Yes.
You heard it here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but we've got Bawana Bostick and so with Florida Policy Institute. Thank you so much for joining us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.
You're listening to WWBC, COCO, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, COCO, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay.